Welcome to the Spotlight Edition of the Future of Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Wright. Join me as I have conversations with some of my favorite medical experts discussing a variety of common health questions. I hope you find this useful, empowering you with confidence along your journey toward optimal health. Let's jump right in. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Bijoy John, a board-certified physician with over 25 years of experience in pulmonary, critical care, and sleep medicine. Dr. John now practices as a sleep specialist in Nashville, Tennessee. He's the founder of the Sleep Wellness Clinics of America, which offers comprehensive care to patients of all ages. He's been voted one of the top 100 physicians in Nashville by My Nashville Magazine and has received multiple honors as the top sleep specialist by Nashville Lifestyle Magazine. He founded the Sleep Fix Academy as an online resource to reach a broader audience. This includes access to podcasts, online courses, books, sleep journals, and much more. In March 2024, he released his first book entitled Nobody's Sleeping, 7 Proven Sleep Strategies for Better Health and Happiness. Join in as Dr. John and I discuss these strategies, as well as topics like sleep medications, advances in sleep apnea care, and much more. Good morning, Dr. John. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join me today for this conversation.
Great being here. And let's learn about sleep today.
Absolutely. A lot of ground to cover. As I generally tell my patients, you know, at minimum, a third of our life should be spent in bed asleep. A third of our days and therefore a third of our lives. And so little things can we talk about that have more importance than this? So the first thing I want to do to introduce you to our audience is your background is so broad in pulmonary and critical care. What led you into sleep medicine and what inspired you to do all that you've done for the sleep community?
Correct. Sleep has always fascinated me. It is simple but complicated. It's mysterious. It's spiritual. You know, as early as in med school, I used to have an all-nighter and try to take the exam. But I always found that if I slept the night well before, I was able to score higher. And sleep was not much talked about. This is in the 80s. But then I realized that even in my daily life, if I rest well, I'm able to perform. I'm a better person. My mood's better. So I knew it was, it affects several functions. And all through my career as an ICU doctor, I saw terrible complications of blood pressure. When it is uncontrolled, you can have a stroke. And then, disorders like sleep apnea can affect high blood pressure and also can affect diabetes, can prevent, further worsening of your memory problems or dementia. So I knew this is a superpower we have. And as years went by, my passion grew and I just said, I'm going to dedicate my life to the research and to spread the knowledge about sleep. So I started my own clinic 3 years ago and then I finally decided to write a book. And that's my passion and I'm trying to take it to the world so everybody can know the superpower they have within themselves.
That's great. Well, and your experience has led you in the start of your career, I guess, to really see the end stage of sleep disorders and the complications that may lead many people to the ICUs. And now you get to focus much more on prevention and great health and making sure that we use our sleep, like you say, as a superpower to direct so much of our health. So I'm sure that's an inspiration because you can share stories of when this goes uncontrolled, this is what it can yield. And now you get to work on the prevention.
Yes, as we grow older, you know, your life's philosophy changes. Then I was practicing completely reactionary medicine in the ICU, trying to save lives. But then I said, hey, let's go to the preventive side. And then sleep is one unifying thing, especially with the, like I just mentioned about, you know, the blood pressure, diabetes. Not only that, the huge impact it has on society with mental health. When you sleep well, you know, your symptoms of anxiety and depression is better. So it affects all of us. We're compromising on our sleep because not many people know the impact good sleep can have. Just like you mentioned, it affects all facets of our body. And so here I am. I just want to spread the good news and to feel the joy that I feel by sleeping well and to share this knowledge to everyone.
That's great. Well, and what I want to do with our conversation is really dive in to some actionable steps that patients can take. And so just a really broad question for you to start with. Of all the conversations you have, do you find yourself repeating the same two or three strategies or tactics for better sleep kind of across the population? Do you find yourself saying the same things over and over again? And if so, please share those with us.
Correct. People come and tell me, hey, you know, I can sleep when I die because people don't know the importance of sleep. You know, I tell people, hey, if you go on the path of poor sleep habit and not addressing your sleep disorders, then you can literally die in your sleep, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a common thing. So sleep is, it's people take it. I'm not taking it very seriously because sleep problems does not hurt like a toothache. So we put it away, then it catches up, with us. So some of the strategy, in fact, I have an acronym for my sleep, the 7 proven sleep strategies that I've perfected over the last 25 years. You know, I was a poor sleeper in med school, and then during the grief of my mom when she passed away 10 years ago. And of course, as a small business owner, you know, all the decisions, but I found a way, and that's why I'm given the 7 proven sleep strategies. I can get into it as now, or we can go step by step. What do you think, Greg?
I'll follow your lead. Let's dive into it. All right. Because I think it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of depth there.
All right. So the acronym, viewers are listening, you can say it's called Sleep Now, SLEEPNOW. So that's the acronym. And my daughter is in law school. She said, Dad, everybody needs an acronym. That's the only way you will have folks follow. I think I just put it down like that. So the first in the acronym is the S, is the schedule. So for any plan to succeed, we need to have a schedule. So we have to have, the ideal schedule to sleep will be between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. So that's when you have to focus the bulk of our sleep. So there's a caveat here. The common thing people do is when they go to bed at 10 and they cannot fall asleep till 11:30, guess what most folks do? They actually go to bed at 9. Now you're struggling 2.5 hours. So please go to bed, close to the time you fell asleep. So if you're falling asleep at 11:30, go to bed by 11:15, not earlier than that. But the key here is you have to wake up at 6 a.m. You have to be consistent. And, you know, when people do the schedule and they see me after years of suffering, the first 2 weeks when they try to implement is the hardest. They call me and they're angry at me and angry at themselves. But after 2 weeks, the cycle starts to improve. So that's the S. And next is the L in the acronym, low light, low noise, low temperature. Remember, melatonin, the hormone that we have within our cells, is only secreted in low temperature and in darkness. Mela means dark. So melatonin is only secreted in darkness. So make sure your bedroom is dark and also secreted in a lower temperature. Make sure your temperature is between 65 to 70. Of course, noise is not good for you for sleep. So try to prevent all the noisy environments around you. So next is my favorite, E in the acronym, is the electronic. I tell people not to be on electronics at least an hour, but practically 30 minutes prior to going to sleep. The light from the phone, it's pretty damaging. It sends the signal to the brain saying it's still daytime. So remember, melatonin only secretes in darkness. The light from the phone is very detrimental to sleep. I keep my phone away. In fact, my New Year resolution was no phones from 7 p.m. on. So I've been fairly consistent with that. So, but practically, I tell people at least 30 minutes. I keep my phone away from me because in the middle of the night, you wake up, you can look at the time and then, wow, it's only 3 o'clock. That's a major problem. So I keep it in my bathroom. I have an alarm for 6 or 6:30 whenever I want to wake up. And also the phone can have notification messages. You're tempted and your mind starts to race. So please remove your phone and keep it away. That's the E. And next is exercise in the acronym. So exercise produces endorphins and also generates heat. So if you're exercising in the evening, make sure you exercise at least 4 hours earlier. So the melatonin actually secretes just prior to our body temperature dropping at night. So ideal time to exercise is in the mornings, but if you have to exercise in the evening, make sure you exercise at least 4 hours prior. So then the last one in the acronym, in the P, is power of your mind. Dr. John, I get asked all the time, how do I do it? So you have to power off your mind by giving your body a chance. You're resting your body by not exercising. You don't have your phone. The lights are dim. So I also teach two techniques. I'm going to spend a couple of minutes here. The first technique is called vivid imagination. I'm trying to familiarize everybody with this. So we bring reality to our bedroom, but I want the abstract. So I tell you are the director of that show. I watched TV show last night. I started thinking about, I've been using this technique for about 30 years in my own personal life. So I don't want reality in your bedroom. I just want to be your abstract. Think about you are the creator. So, and your imagination, let it run wild. Okay. And then the next one is yoga nidra. Nidra is a Sanskrit for nothingness. You just lay down on your back and you spread your palms towards the ceiling and you start thinking about nothing. In fact, if you want, you can start thinking in various parts of your body, thinking about your head, the tension in your muscles and your arms and your legs all the way down to your toes. So this is this is part of the cognitive behavioral therapy of insomnia. So I incorporate that. So that's how you power off your mind. So next going down is NO in the acronym, no to worries. I get asked, Dr. John, we worry all the time. I say to people, worry between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. and prepare to bed after that. So I tell people to have a dedicated worrying time between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Don't bring it to your bedroom, all right? So we're all prone to worries. I worry. I was getting ready to the show last night. I was looking at all the keynotes Craig wanted me to do. So I finished all. I didn't look at it after that. So that's your time. And then the last one is W, is win by losing. In the hustle culture, we want to hustle our way into everything, but sleep is contrary to this hustle culture. Sleep is one, a function. You have to gently get into it. You can't go get it. Everybody says go get everything, but you cannot. You have to keep your routine very simple. That's why you have to lose yourself in this process. So we want sleep to be like an on and off switch, but sleep is a dimmer. You have to slowly dim it down. So you have to start the process around 8 p.m. and get ready for 10 p.m. bed. So that's the Sleep Now acronym. So and also I give this simple analogy. As you enter the bedroom, when you enter the door, it's like a TSA screener. You are bringing your worries to your bed. Beep, you got to go back, you can relax. And then if you're bringing your electronics to the bedroom, beep, you have to go back. And the same thing, if you're wearing like tight clothes, belt and metal on your bed, beep, you got to go wear comfortable clothes. So these are the things you are preparing. It's like a big meal. You can't have the steak right away. You have to have the music, the cheese, the wine, and the salad before. So it's a process. Unfortunately, that's the only way. It's an ancient art. So I'm a huge fan of this holistic way of getting our own natural. So I hope this helps, Greg.
Thanks. Absolutely. Yes. A lot of depth there. A lot of depth. And I appreciate you going through each one. And we'll definitely put those in the show notes so that they can be digested well, because how you mention these really strikes me is I have discussions with my primary care patients that it really involves a training process, that each of these pieces of the acronym aren't going to be quick results. They're going to be schedules and they're going to be structure that you really have to build in, that if you give that enough time in residence, then you reap the rewards. To generalize, I think we do as a culture and we do as individuals, we look for something that can have a little more quick gratification. And it's nice to have you remind us that this is really where the value comes from. So thank you for sharing those. And one that you mentioned that I really think would resonate with many of the people I work with is say no to worry. I love how you phrased it as almost schedule your worry, because we are going to have worries. It's natural, but putting a boundary around it. And I love the TSA screener analogy where, you're outside your schedule. Just like if you and I had a meeting that starts here in an hour, we're going to know that that's where we need to be. We're going to have dedicated time for it. Do the same with your worry. Do the same with your sleep schedule. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah, it's a process. You can, I tell people it'll take about 6 weeks, but 6 weeks in the span of years of suffering with different things, It's not a big deal. You can get it 2 weeks. The first week is most difficult when you follow everything. I tell people to map out their sleep schedule. You know, I have enclosed it on my website, also in my book, the sleep journal. So you can see it's very eye-opening to people when they fill that journal to see, hey, when did they have their caffeine? When did they take a nap? When did they take this medication? So it's an eye-opener. So that also helps keep track. I prefer a practical handwritten, sleep schedule and the sleep journal than the wearables mm-hmm. where everybody's doing these days.
Yes, that's a great point. And to dive into kind of specific situations that I run into a lot in primary care, and this is oversimplified, but you really run into the challenge of the sleep onset and the sleep maintenance. And obviously your tactics, I think, are truly applicable to both populations. But let's focus on the sleep maintenance individuals for a second. The individuals who, they may have no trouble getting to sleep, but they wake up at 2 a.m. and can't get back to sleep. And let's really speak to those that maybe their mind seems to be what keeps them awake. Their mind races to the next day's activities or what they look back on for the day. What do you tell those individuals to try to reset their sleep patterns?
Great question, Craig. So the sleep onset and sleep maintenance, when I see someone, I just have to ask them, is sleep, the lack thereof, is it a primary problem or is it coexistent? It's an underlying manifestation of a medical disorder like heart problem, lung problem, diabetes problem. Is that, or mm-hmm. is it a psychological or a mental problem, anxiety and depression? So I go through my experience in all the other fields. I'm able to narrow it down. So then I'm able to say, hey, you just have a sleep problem. Everybody goes through the acronym. And then if you wake up in the middle of the night, that is a significant problem. Half of my clients have either one of the two. So here it gets really interesting. So if you look at the sleep cycle, there are several stages and we are all prone to wake up at multiple times in the night. I also wake up. Most of the time it is use the restroom. So I tell people, if you wake up, the simple thing is to keep the sleep shape. Don't come out of your shape, or I sometimes call it the bubble. But people come out of their shape by looking at their phone, right? Then they are at their clock. So there should not be any clock or electronics in your vicinity or your eyesight, because once you look at the time, Craig, it's over. You are like, wow, it's 3 o'clock. Oh, it's only 3 o'clock. I only slept 3 hours, 4 hours. So we don't want that access. So this helps at least 50% of that problem, mm-hmm. right? Because once you are aware, you're done. So I tell people to keep that sleep shape and just come back to bed and try to go back to sleep. So having the phone near you is very detrimental. So I cannot stress that factor. So the next thing is, why are you waking up in the middle of the night? One of the most commonest things people wake up in the middle of the night is sleep apnea. So whenever you have an apnea, the brain wakes you up, because the aim of your brain is to keep you alive. And then you wake up. So if you're snoring, you have to rule that out. That may be one of the significant reasons why you're waking up in the middle of the night. And then the next thing is, are you high in men, especially if you have a prostate problem, they wake up. So again, it goes to medical problem, medical reason. And also women who are, perimenopausal or postmenopausal, they have night sweats that wakes them up. And also the lining of the, urine passage gets slowed during perimenopause and menopause, and women are at risk for urinary tract infection. That could be waking them up. Or there may be many habits of people drinking their favorite tea towards bedtime, or even alcohol close to bedtime. That can all wake up. So we have to go through some of their habits, what's happening. So then if it's stress and anxiety is a problem, then you have to focus on that. If medical mm-hmm. problems, you have to wake up. But the most important thing when you wake up in the middle of the night is sleep apnea wakes you up. Yeah. So that's a easily treatable condition. So if you screen 100 people, I'm talking about adults who wake up in the middle of the night, more than 60 or 70% will have sleep apnea.
Mm. Thank you for that reminder that often the sleep challenges that one may face is a symptom of an underlying problem. And too often we reach to treat that symptom, without adequately getting down to the root cause. And that's a great reminder, because like many things in healthcare, if you treat the symptom and miss the root, the treatment is minimally effective, and it never really gives you the release and the healing that you may need.
Correct. We heal in our sleep. Yeah. And I reiterate this point many times. Lack of sleep is an underlying, there's something beneath the surface, especially in children. I mentioned this many times in my book. Children are sound sleepers. As parents and grandparents and the viewers you are listening, if your child, meaning a pre-college age child, is not sleeping, it's actually a cry for help. We have to pay attention to that child, why the child is not sleeping. As we know, as we grow older, you know, in college, your sleep is bad. Then we have our jobs, you have your family, you have your all the other commitments. But children should be sound sleeper. If the child is not sleeping, it is a cry for help. That mm-hmm. child needs help. So please pay attention to that.
Yeah.
So sleep, you know, lack thereof is a warning symptom for something underneath.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And you touched on, and we'll go back to sleep apnea.
Yes.
I don't ever want to overstate something, but I think even as much awareness as there is now around sleep apnea, it's still underdiagnosed and underappreciated and really underrespected. I run into many individuals where we talk about their sleep, their health, maybe their weight. Maybe we talk about snoring, maybe we don't, but we feel like we get on the scent of sleep apnea. But there's still a lot of reluctance.
Yes.
What do you tell the people, or what would you recommend I tell the patients that maybe tell me, well, I don't have time for a sleep study, or I could never sleep in a mask with a machine. And they have that immediate block before they even pursue diagnosis or treatment.
So those are, you know, things have evolved in the last 40 years, ever since sleep apnea concept has been aware, people are aware of. See, the treatment is simpler. The diagnosis is even more simpler. In the past, we had to go to the lab study. Now we have something called home sleep studies. I do always home sleep studies, unless there are a few circumstances when I send them for in-lab, but 90% or 95%, I only order home sleep studies. So you just take this device from my office, you sleep with it, and then return it back the next day. So that's easy. Mm-hmm. People are afraid naturally. They don't want to be in a strange environment, you know, like a hotel room, being people watched on camera. In fact, everybody sleeps better in their own house, and you get a better data mm-hmm. and better information. And of course, the treatment is just not the mask anymore. The masks, in fact, are smaller. Then there are newer devices called Excite OSA. Then there's Inspire. Then there's oral appliance. So there's many, many new treatments that are available. So the most important things, if you're snoring, there's almost like a 90% chance that you have sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. So as we grow older, you know, lack of hormones, you know, low testosterone, low estrogen in women can cause sleep apnea. In fact, you know, I have sleep apnea. I did my home sleep study, and then, you know, I'm on this newer treatment device. So we are all prone as we age, things sag and, you know, blocks the airway, and that causes the obstruction, that causes the snoring, and couples are sleeping separately. The new terminology is called sleep divorce. That affects their marriages. My aim is to bring couples together. So because of the snoring, that, you know, the couples are sleeping separately. So it affects different parts of our body, emotionally, psychological, not to mention the health concerns and the benefits of treating sleep apnea.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. I always feel in primary care, I've always said throughout my career that there's very few conditions that a primary care doc can diagnose and manage that the patient considers life-changing. But sleep apnea, I remember some of the first individuals I saw when I started my career 10, 11 years ago, that when you change someone's sleep, and like you touched on, you may change their relationship with their partner. You change their energy during the day. You change their focus. Those are the type of things patients give you hugs about.
Correct.
You know, they're so thankful. And it originated with a sleep disorder. And sleep apnea being so common is one that you often can see. You mentioned Inspire, Excite OSA, and some of the non-CPAP technologies. Tell me more about how you select which patients for which intervention.
Great question. You know, sleep apnea is, you know, depends upon the number of events of apnea per hour is classified into mild, medium, and severe. So CPAP is generally reserved for severe. That's the best treatment. When it is mild to moderate, you have the newer treatments, the Excite OSA. That's like a tongue exercising device. It strengthens the muscles of the tongue. And the next is the oral appliance. When done right by an expert dentist, actually moves the jaw a little bit forward and gets the tongue. Remember, the tongue is the major problem that causes the obstruction. We talk about sleep apnea, but there's a word before it. It's called obstructive sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. The tongue causes almost 90% of the reason for the obstruction, and all the treatment, including CPAP, you know, blows air to get the tongue out of the way. So there's newer options. And of course, if it is mild, a 10% weight loss will also help with the resolution of their apnea. So weight loss and the newer treatments, can help people in their journey. You know, treatment of sleep apnea actually adds years to your life because you're preventing all the other medical complications that can be easily controlled with the treatment of sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm. You actually touched there on something I also wanted to go back to, where you reference, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but you reference how maybe suboptimal hormones can lead to sleep disorders, maybe even sleep apnea. But then the presence of that then magnifies the deficiency of those hormones. And even I think we could probably draw a correlation there to the weight, where individuals who are overweight or obese are more likely to have sleep disorders. And then having that sleep disorder makes it harder to lose weight. And oftentimes I'll use a metaphor of a hamster wheel of despair, where once that poor little hamster gets on that wheel and keeps running, it doesn't realize how fast it's running and getting nowhere. And tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that process, where you really have an interplay between maybe a low hormone or an individual with more body weight than they need, and then the sleep disorder. Where do you intervene, or do you have to intervene at multiple spots in that loop?
Great question. So, see, when we make our new resolution about fitness and weight, we got to have this third dimension, that is sleep. When you sleep well, you have more energy to work out, and that also changes the metabolism. It actually alters the leptin and the ghrelin. So as everybody's aware, leptin lowers our appetite, ghrelin increases our appetite. Poor sleep changes the ratio, so we end up with more ghrelin and the more appetite. So we have to have good sleep as a in fact, it is a foundation on where fitness and weight loss is built. And as you gain weight, you've fallen into this vicious cycle or the hamster wheel, where the more weight causes you to have more obstruction in your throat, because fat is deposited evenly all through our body. So it narrows. We are talking about millimeters. So when it narrows, you have more sleep apnea, and then more, sleep apnea, your metabolism is lower, then more weight gain. So somewhere along the line, we have to break that cycle. Mm-hmm. And the hormones, the low testosterone and estrogen, can cause sleep apnea. And also the replacement has to be done by an expert, because too much of these hormones can change the deposition and the mobilization of fat. And that can, in fact, can lead to sleep apnea. So it has to be done by an expert, even when hormone replacement therapy is being done. So
absolutely. Well, and I know to a patient, it can seem overwhelming that, they, especially if they're late to the diagnosis or even late to seek treatment, where they may be feeling so many symptoms, like we said initially, that come back to the root cause of maybe poor sleep or poor lifestyle habits. But I always try to simplify things with my patients where they don't feel the overwhelm, that we prioritize, what should we touch first, second, and third, and what's a reasonable amount of time to see positive change, and try to consolidate the noise and the overwhelm into an actionable list. So thank you for bringing that to our attention as well, with some of, even going back to your acronym, I wanted to touch on some of the evening habits and how evening habits, even healthy habits, yes, may negatively impact sleep. So I'd love for you, if you can, to touch on nutrition, when we should eat compared to our sleep time, needless to say, we work with a lot of individuals who are very busy. They don't have traditional work hours. They have families that are involved in many things. And so maybe their dinner time isn't quite as predictable as they would like. So touching on how, when, and maybe even what you eat at night can affect your sleep. And then alcohol and an evening drink or two, how does that affect one's sleep patterns?
All right. So even just having a high glycemic meal with high carbs 4 hours prior to going to sleep can affect your quality of sleep. And also a large meal. The body is trying to digest that meal, and the end product of that digestive process is heat. Remember when I talked about heat is it does not help secretion of melatonin. So that's the reason why after a big meal, people not sleep well. And not only that, the big meal distends your stomach. You know, the food stays in our stomach, the digestive process, about 2 to 3 hours. So ideally, if you're going to have a meal, make sure at least 3 hours prior to going to sleep. And try to eat a smaller meal at bedtime. And also the full stomach can provoke acid reflux. And the natural biorhythm of the body, the peak acid is secreted between 2 and 4 a.m. So now you have a spicy or high, carbonated drinks, then that causes more reflux and then the more acid. And the acid can literally come up to the back of your throat. And that's another reason people wake up in the middle of the night with, coughing spells, because the acid is irritating the throat. So those are some of those things. So eat a smaller meal, at least, and preferably with a salad and less carbs, at least 3 to 4 hours prior to going to sleep. So you'll have our body to have a nice digestive system, and the food has left the stomach. As regarding alcohol, it's very, very interesting. Alcohol, some people drink alcohol to go to sleep, which is absolutely the wrong thing to do, because alcohol does not put you to sleep. It actually acts like an anesthetic. It drowns the brain, but it's not good quality sleep. Mm-hmm. And then alcohol metabolizes into acetaldehyde, which is a chemical irritant, wakes you up. And also alcohol is a diuretic, and then you have to wake up to use the restroom. So having a glass or two of wine, maybe around 6 or 7, that's fine. But using it as an hypnotic or a medicine to go to sleep is absolutely a wrong thing to do, because of the many reasons. The more acetaldehyde that builds up in your body, the more it's going to wake you up. So prevent it, drinking closer to bedtime, because it's going to happen 3 to 4 hours with the buildup of this chemical.
Yeah, so it sounds like really a 4-hour window there, which I think you also recognize for exercise.
Correct.
So don't exercise within 4 hours of bedtime.
Yes.
Don't take in any calorie or drink other than water.
Yes.
Ideally within 4 hours of bedtime.
Yes.
Great. That gives discipline and structure.
Exactly.
That I know goes back obviously to many pieces of your acronym, but I love when I can recommend really the easy button, so to speak, where somebody just has to look at a watch and say, well, can I or can't I?
Yes.
They don't have to worry about anything else other than, no, bedtime's at 10. And so at 6 p.m., no more exercise, no more nutrition or calorie. So I love that guidance and that structure. Last thing I really want to touch on, and I deliberately wanted, and I'm glad our conversation allowed this to be at the end, is sleep medications. I think you and I probably agree that medications are, often very appropriate and necessary even, but you really can't overlook the focus on these foundations and doing the right thing to set you up for success. But let's talk a bit about sleep medications. As you can imagine, many people come to me and they've already reached for something. If they're having trouble maybe falling asleep or even staying asleep, they'll have tried melatonin. They may have reached for Unisom or other over-the-counter agents. What's your approach to a discussion when a patient desires sleep medications?
Correct. So in my practice, I've always done it a holistic way. So my aim is to take people off all the medications. There is no safe medication, sleep medication out there. The over-the-counter medications, they work for a little bit, but they don't, because we have our own melatonin. We have our own GABA, which is another chemical that puts us to sleep. So I am not a huge fan of medications, but sometimes I have to. You know, in 10% of my patients, I do have to put them on medications. But, you know, even, you know, any long-term medications has side effects, can have memory issues. Mm-hmm. And the most important is feeling tired the next day. You are in a brain fog. And then you also have the risk of falling. You know, that's another risk of this residual side effects of the medication. So even if I prescribe any medication, I reassess them consistently about every 3 to 6 months, trying an effort to lower the medications or wean them off the medications. Mm. So there are a lot of new medications which are giving some hope, but everything comes, it's a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. It helps two people to sleep, but then you have the side effects the next day being groggy, and also yes. the memory problems that have been associated with long-term use of medications.
Yes, and many of which can build dependence or tolerance in their use. And so you become, that becomes part of your sleep routine. And like you mentioned, and I love your goal of getting individuals off sleep medications. Do you have any tips or recommendations for patients who may come to you or to myself having been on a medication like an Ambien or even a terazodone or even a melatonin for, let's say, a couple of years? So they have adjusted their life to include the medication. Do you have a different approach to them or recommendations for tapering a med?
So the best way is to lower the dose. If they're on 10 milligrams, I tell them to go by to 5 milligrams. And then also taking the medication every other day, right? So you can go off these medications dramatically. You have to go, you know, if they're taking 10, go to 5 and then 2.5, slowly wean them off and try to look into the other things that could be causing the sleep problem. So if they started this medication a few years ago, they may have gained weight. You know, they might have, you know, even other conditions like restless leg syndrome, which is mm-hmm. easily treated with iron. So other disorders or heart problem, lung problem could have crept in over these mm-hmm. years. So just, you know, addressing that and trying to wean them off. So if at all you have to put somebody or if they have to keep on the medication, the lowest is probably the best. And using the acronym and trying to have a discipline mm-hmm. will, you know, get the power back. We have it within ourselves. We don't need an external medication, you know, for us. So empower people. And yeah. if they need the lowest possible medication. So to answer your question, tell them to go at a lower dose. That's what I do in my own practice. And then try every other day and empower them, rule out sleep disorders, medical disorders. And if they have anxiety, which is causing them, address that, you know, and then they won't need any medications. I've been quite successful in taking several patients off medication over the 20 years I've been in practice.
That's great. Yes. Well, and when you use the word empower, it brings back to memory the superpower
yes.
that you touched on
yeah.
at the beginning. And I think to even view what can be so frustrating for patients, a lack of sleep or a fatigue that's affected by sleep, to reframe their awareness that it is actually a superpower that just has to be cultivated, has to be trained, and can end up being such a positive influence on their health journey. So
when people say they're compromising on their sleep to do that extra work, I tell you, if you sleep that extra hour, you will be more productive the next day. Trust me, you know, because our mind is and our brains are like a supercharged computer. It needs a break. You know, we live in this hustle culture with so much information, overdrive, but we need more rest. And, you know, you can refuel, re-energize your brain and your thinking capacity because we heal in our sleep. We grow in our sleep. You know, memory consolidation, learning all happens in our sleep. You know, I've discovered this joy despite all my struggles and I put it into writing. And, you know, I want that joy to be heard and felt with everybody else.
No, that's so true. I often look back and think of my medical school training where I had no frame of reference at the time, but I can almost guarantee I would have been a better student if I had studied less
yes.
and slept more.
Correct.
All too often, whether you're in school or a professional, we infringe upon our sleep to our own detriment for all those reasons you just mentioned. So it's a great reminder of, you know, maybe an extra hour of sleep may gain you 3 hours of productivity the next day.
Correct.
Which is powerful. So Well, Dr. John, we are so blessed to have you on this spotlight edition of our Future Medicine podcast, but I really want to tell our listenership how they can connect with you. Obviously, our practice located here in Nashville, and you practice just a little bit south in Brentwood. Tell us about your sleep clinics, but then also tell us about
the release of your book that came out earlier this month in April of 2024. Tell us about your book and where it can be purchased, as well as tell us about the Sleep Fix Academy that allows you to reach individuals outside the local Nashville area and can reach, obviously, the ends of the country and the globe.
How excited I am about sharing my book. It's come out. It's called Nobody's Sleeping, The 7 Proven Sleep Strategies. That's my work for 25 years to empower people so that they can be more knowledgeable. It's available on Amazon and every major retailer. Bookstores is available on Barnes & Noble, wherever you guys shop, it's there. So that's, hopefully people can learn more about that. So my clinic is located in Brentwood, and it's called Sleep Wellness Clinics of America. And also the online academy is called Sleep Fix Academy. I'm on all the social media handles. In fact, I'm also on TikTok. I've taken the name of Dr. Sleep Fix. You can find me on Instagram. So I kept the same thing with Sleep Fix Academy. I also have a Sleep Now course. People who don't want to see physicians, or they want to see me at the time, they can take that online course. It's a 6-week interactive course. I put it on my website so people can also do that if they need to. So I have all the resources. I have also a lot of blogs. I have a sleep assessment on my website. I have a podcast and a lot of resources on my website, sleepfixacademy.com.
That's great. Well, I want to make sure that our listenership knows that as much information as there is out there, as much as there is to consume, that any amount of content that can be consumed from you is valuable. I haven't completely read your book yet, as I told you, but I will tell you from what I know about you and from the chapters I've read, the sections I've read, there's such depth. I told you before we started, every word is meaningful. So much value that you give through this book, and I can only imagine the Sleep Fix Academy gives so much value through the course and other resources that you can connect people with. So once again, Dr. John, thank you for coming onto our podcast. Really want to encourage any listeners, local or broader, to reach out to you and to connect with your content and have their lives truly changed. Sleep is so important. I'm so glad we share that. You have been a great colleague of mine to co-manage many patients with sleep disorders, and I'm thankful for you taking the time to be here.
Thanks, Craig. It was my pleasure. The world needs to heal. We need to sleep better. We can be better human beings just by sleeping. The simple thing that we have, we don't need to seek outside within us. It's a superpower, like mentioned. So when you sleep well, you're going to be a great person, your personal life, your family life, your professional life, your athletic life. So I have many chapters in my book. My aim is to spread this message all over the world. Please support me in this, and sleep well and be well, everyone.
Absolutely. Blessings on those efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for listening to this conversation. I truly hope you found it useful. You can find out more about today's episode and discover additional content at brentwoodmd.com/podcast. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. We would be honored if you would leave a review or even a recommendation for a future conversation you would like to hear. If you would like to learn more about the concierge services that we provide at Brentwood MD, email us at membership@brentwoodmd.com. We'd love to meet you. This podcast was for general information only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or giving of medical advice, as no doctor-patient relationship has been formed. The content of this podcast is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should seek the advice of their own trusted medical professionals.